Thank you, Nathan. My name again is Steve McMillan. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. And I'm going to be talking about home visitation. So let me just kick off with that. I have no financial relationships that I'm aware of to disclose here. I would include early childhood home visitation as a relationship-based social program. And really what I mean by that is it draws those who participate in those programs into a reflective process. So the theory base of a lot of these programs is psychodynamic, psychoanalytic. It really focuses on attachment. There's literature that suggests that asking for or receiving a social service is in itself anxiety-producing, especially when the topic is your parenting. So early childhood home visiting is explicitly relationship-based as its design. To say a little bit more about that, home visiting, I suspect a lot of people in here are familiar with it. It's usually weekly or biweekly visits to the home. Home visitors provide some social support, some education, usually families with young children or newborns. I like to say perinatal to pre-K, and very often they're referred to as 0 to 3 programs. So if you're familiar with a home visitor, they come to your home, they talk to you, engage with the mom a little bit, stretch out on the carpet with you and the baby, show you the wonder of what your baby can do, have a curriculum plan that has some content to it beyond that. So if we look at the evidence base for home visiting, we tend to see small but positive and somewhat inconsistent effects. Some of the goals of home visiting are in child maltreatment prevention or reduction, child development outcomes, maternal behavior outcomes. So evidence-based home visiting as a topic really refers to the HOME-V funding from Health and Human Services for it. The MCV program of the Affordable Care Act greatly expanded home visiting if you met this criteria to be evidence-based. The models that I studied were really widely disseminated HOME-V, MCV approved models, Healthy Families America, which tends to have different state affiliates, and then parents as teachers. And so again, it's roughly visits are about an hour, there's some kind of curricular lesson, there's some kind of parent-child interaction, and it's really the mom and the home visitor getting a chance to talk. This work that I'm doing in this area is really pretty theory-driven and theory-based. It's part of the problem when we talk about evidence-based home visiting is what I think of or what's been framed as credible defamiliarization, meaning when we talk about evidence-based practice, we get very technical, and sometimes we redefine them in ways that the original meanings are lost. So everybody here is familiar with research synthesis, you see meta-analyses, you see systematic reviews. If you actually go through the content of a systematic review, it's going to have a lot of checkboxes, and some of those checks are going to say, I don't know if this study did this. I can't tell if this study did this. So we use the term systematic even though we know that there's a lot of gaps in the evidence, even in the data that we include there. So coming back to what these programs try to do, they're empowerment programs, and yet power is always an issue or a question in these programs. The programs get approved because they're evidence-based, because they hit those hard outcomes. Some of those outcomes that are always looked at are, did you prevent or reduce rapid subsequent pregnancy? Did you get appropriate family planning integrated? And so my approach to this is I just find it really interesting. They're empowerment programs that really have a lot of requirements to them. What do we know about how these programs manage the tension between being relationship-based and evidence-based, between being empowering and yet having to use power to get their outcomes that they need to survive financially and juridically? So the questions that I ask here go back to some very theory-driven political science questions of Lindblom's concept of circularity or controlled volition, the idea that those with power, whether it's the government, the state, or a home visiting program, can use power in subtle ways to discourage requests for things that they would prefer not to grant or not to discuss. And so if you think back to political science theory, you know, John Kingdon, the first pace of power, is kind of this idea that we participate in a democracy, we compromise and get our agenda on the table. The second phase of power, Bachrach and Barat, gets into this idea of, you know what, elites can put their thumbs on the scale. Elites can control what comes up for the agenda. They can keep things off the agenda. And then Stephen Lux's idea of the third phase of power, that the way power is exchanged and regulated means we become self-regulators, meaning we become disinclined to ask for things that the powers that be won't like. So that's really what I was interested here, coming back to Lindblom. Is there evidence of controlled volition in this intimate home visiting world, especially around fairly controversial topics like reproductive care? So the method that I use here, this was really deeply qualitative work, in-depth elite interviews. And when I say elite, really I got to talk to home visiting administrators in a large Midwestern state. About 15 of them were the state-level program model trainers, administrators, technical assistants. There were only 15. I got to talk to all of them. 19 were local program directors and supervisors. So I got a nice mix of the people kind of running home visiting in the state and people on the ground who saw what the programs actually looked like. In terms of my analytic method, I did a lot of open sequence quoting. I do a lot of assertion analysis, which is really a content analysis that looks at how much topics come up. I found this to be really effective and successful, looking at kind of the controversial areas of evidence-based practice, complex or controversial public issues in general. So I do a lot of work on LGBT issues. The first part of this study actually was LGBT-related. I'm not presenting that today, but I found this method to be really effective for that. I also did pragmatic compression, which if you're a political science methodologist was actually really hard. And then I actually used a simple goal attainment scale to kind of place where programs were placing themselves in terms of their outcomes. So just jumping into results, the three big issues that came up, abortion. And for home visiting, it means I got pregnant, I had a baby, I got home visiting, now I have a rapid subsequent pregnancy, what am I going to do about it? What if I'm asking my home visitor about abortion? Contraception, which was kind of the way I framed this question, family planning, reproductive care, and then emergency contraception kind of popped up as this third theme or category that bridged abortion and contraception in some ways. Abortion was overwhelmingly the most controversial. I had to really do a lot of negative case analysis to find any reaction to abortion that was not negative. So abortion was either framed as implicitly bad. So like the other bad things that some of these participants do, like they're on drugs, they have lots of kids, they don't have a job. So implicitly bad like the other things. Explicitly bad, like home visiting is the opposite of abortion. That's not what we're about. And then the negative case analysis is what I would think of as respecting reproductive rights, that it's an individual decision, the home visitor, the relationship is to support the empowerment of that woman. So here's some quotes that will, I hope, elucidate this a little bit. So abortion as implicitly bad, subtly discouraged. And so I can still remember this respondent's words in my head. So here's her talking to someone who's seeking an abortion. Okay, you're thinking about abortion. Do you know that that costs a lot of money? The staff would never come out and say, I don't believe in an abortion, you shouldn't get one. No staff member to my knowledge has ever said that. But this is what you need to think about if you're having an abortion. The cost, you know. What's going to happen with your body? You know, things about emotionally, how are you going to deal with that? Ultimately, it's their decision and how we leave it. So I'm going to stop reading to you, but if you hear kind of the tone of voice that I remember this quote as, it's not at all their decision, that's where we leave it. It's kind of this dramatic performance of all the things that the person thinks can go wrong. Some of it was just very explicit in saying where we draw the line doesn't have anything to do with our model is when people come and ask how to terminate a pregnancy. So right there, without judgment or anything, we actually don't have anybody around here that I know of. We'll give them information about home visiting. If you choose to have this, I don't have any information to give you. But I found so interesting about this response was this was a program in a small city where the local abortion provider did just close but turned their entire website into here's where you can go for reproductive care services. So anybody in that city who had ever heard of that provider had an online website at their fingertips, and this person said, oh, I don't know anything about it. So I thought that was really explicitly bad and discouraging. And then what I call the negative case analysis, how do I find someone not negative about abortion, was basically saying giving them information, supporting them in their decision should not mean to you the same thing as I just aborted a baby or ended life. You've done your part. You've provided the education. You've supported them in their decision. You've sent them down the hall at the local county health department to the family planning program, to the nurse who takes it from there. So this is a person who is pretty personally opposed to abortion, who I thought gave a really rich description of how local health departments handle these issues in this context. So the next issue was contraception, and this is where I got, I think, more of a variety of responses. So some were certainly negative or disengaged about it. It is not our goal to speak to them about family planning. It's our goal to support the family in whatever direction it takes them. If it's 10 more kids, then we're there to support how they're going to be able to work with those children, no matter how many are coming. Some were recognized kind of that this was part of the program, that it was still relational. It's not, don't have another child, but it's what's best for you now. What comes next? We brought up birth control as much as we thought appropriate, frequently. What I liked about this response was that there was some recognition that some of the moms in the program might not have been fully empowered to request what they wanted, so they really kind of screened for domestic violence, for substance abuse, for other things that interfered with potentially their ability to use family planning well. And then lastly, emergency contraception was really, I think, the most shocking response of this part of the study to me. It did not come up a lot. When it came up, it was almost always identified with abortion. So some staff don't believe in abortion, but don't believe that emergency contraception is abortion. So you've got kind of a mix, meaning a lot of staff did believe emergency contraception was abortion. Just the terms were used interchangeably, and that this was an area where, when it came up, home visitors or other employees would just refuse to talk about it and pass it up to the supervisor. So it was a case of the home visitor or the staff kind of walking away from emergency contraception to pass it back up to the supervisor. So some of the implications that I think I see from this work, first of all, again, this is very theory-driven work, but I do think there's evidence of controlled volition on abortion, this implicit reaction that starts out comparing abortion to other illegal behaviors, like substance abuse, when abortion is a legal behavior, or reverse behaviors, like you already have too many children, that's bad, just like having an abortion is bad. There's really not kind of a logic flow there. There's less evidence for controlled volition on family planning, but certainly some evidence that some programs tried to delegitimize family planning as a topic or part of home visitation. Isolated but kind of shocking references to emergency contraception fairly consistently misidentified as abortion. I think in terms of policy, the one thing that I really come back to is these are established, evidence-based home visiting program models, both of which have pretty explicit criteria for healthcare referrals that do not exclude reproductive care referrals. So Healthy Families talks about being linked to a provider to assure optimal health and development. Parents as Teachers describes linking to a resource network so that participants can get the services that they need, and this is their emphasis, not mine. And then lastly, in terms of practice, I think the policy consequences of the status quo are what we see kind of most vividly here, just that lack of contraceptive access increases the number of abortions by approximately 810,000 a year. The public cost of uninsured unintended births goes up by about $11 billion a year as a result. Larkin, I was just at a conference where I was told we have to start saying HERC, so highly effective reversible contraception, is very inexpensive, much more effective, rarely used. We're just not getting the take-up that we like to see there. And certainly the respondent that if it's one kid or 10, it doesn't matter, having multiple children is in itself a risk for child maltreatment given the other circumstances in these women's lives. So that is something that these programs were designed to address that are not being implemented to address in all cases. So implications for practice, I think, is that basically we're saying these are relationship-based empowering programs, but the participants may not get the practical help that they need in areas of reproductive care, especially this loose definition of referral. Some of the comments were, oh, well, they can get it themselves, even though they can't ever leave their house otherwise. This idea of, well, you don't have transport, but I'm just giving you a phone number. And then really the shocking thing, I think, in this part of the study was that emergency contraception didn't come up a lot. When it came up, it was identified with abortion, or that's something you could have a belief about, and that belief kind of trumped what the staff member could or would do next. So I will wrap up by saying that people who do home visiting work in county public health departments, in larger systems, in not-for-profit systems, tend to be baby people. I mean, these are the kind of people who they see a baby in the stroller and life stops. Like, you want to interact with that baby in the stroller. I'm one of those people. So I just think it's part of what I think overlays this is home visitors are baby people. However, despite that and given that, emergency contraception, I really thought was kind of a shocking finding given how reasonably well-educated a lot of these staff members are. So the key takeaway is just that the evidence base for home visiting really needs to look at more of this relationship, that these controversial issues block relationship in some ways. I think this is a very political process, and I think theory helps us understand this. It really reduces the political voice and equitable equitable access for these women when they are subject to controlled volition. I don't want to talk about this. Let me nudge you to the side. Program supervisors really do function as gatekeepers, and this is another thing that I thought was kind of interesting. Supervisors who seemed personally opposed to some of these issues were the gatekeepers who made sure that referrals to reproductive care still happened. That was the line staff who were uncomfortable who passed it up the food chain, and the supervisors made sure referrals happened even when they seemed opposed to it themselves. So I'm underestimating my time use. I'm going to go ahead and stop here and pass it to the next person. Thank you.